There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right
now. Welcome to the Mint Euro Special 2016 podcast. Over the next 30 days, Ankit Prasad will take you through some of the most exciting happenings from on and off the football field.
Hello and welcome to European Nights, a show about football. Today is Tuesday the 28th of June and I'm Ankit Prasad. For over 3 weeks now, the European Championships and the Copa America Centenario have kept football fans occupied and stopped them from begrudging the summer for taking away their football. That will still happen as it's a long summer even with a major tournament or two. But there is no doubt that the two competitions, one of which is being played outside of its calendar, have made the last month a little less intolerable and a lot more fun. However, it's probably fair to say that things got a little too real yesterday, and so our gloves are off and the discussion is about to begin. There are three talking points in all, and we'll look at them in reverse chronological order. Late last night, England kicked off versus Iceland in the final round of 16 knockout. Iceland, just to remind you, is a debutant at major international tournaments. Its ranking isn't bad, 34th in the world before this tournament started, but as low as 131st just 4 years ago. So if there is a country that should tell India that there is hope, it's Iceland. Also, its population is just about a third of a million, which is about half as much as Pondicherry in India. 4 Stade de Frances could accommodate their entire population, and it feels like 1 Stade de France worth of them are in fact in France at the moment to cheer on their team. England, on the other hand, are England, a soon-to-be non-member of the European Union, but a historical and current footballing powerhouse, not just because they've won a World Cup and generally managed to qualify, or because they're ranked 11th in the world, but mostly because the English Football League system and their clubs are some of the biggest, wealthiest and best followed in the world. Roy Hodgson started with Daniel Sturridge and Raheem Sterling on either side of Harry Kane in attack, which immediately should have set off alarm bells because 2 of those 3 have been rubbish so far, and England's biggest problem, which is a good problem, is that they have too many attackers. For instance, Rooney started in midfield again. But, just 3 minutes in, the strategy of fitting in as many attackers into various positions as possible appeared to have already paid off. Raheem Sterling chasing what can quite easily be quantified as a lost cause was brought down by Iceland's keeper and the referee didn't hesitate in awarding a penalty. Rooney converted said penalty and England were away. Except that they weren't. Iceland promptly kicked off a minute later and equalised almost instantly by using their main weapon, the long throw-in. Ragnar Sigurdsson made the most of a flick-on to bundle the ball in from close range. And then, a short while later, England were down. Joe Hart, who had earlier in the tournament allowed a Gareth Bale free kick to sneak in low to his left, was once again culpable for the same thing, as Kolbeinn Sigþórsson's shot went in despite the Manchester City keeper having got a hand to it. England were 2-1 down, and the Icelandic fans were in Valhalla, but still, there were 70 minutes to go. Surely England would find a goal, and if nothing else, take the match to extra time, which would in itself be highly embarrassing. But instead, what happened was that more than an hour of football went by, and apart from a couple of shots from outside the box, England didn't really trouble the Iceland keeper. And if anything, Iceland could have been 2 up, only Ragnar Sigurdsson's acrobatic attempt went straight at Hart. Hodgson, on whose face one could see the final scoreline already irrevocably written, had thrown on a barely fit Jack Wilshere and Jamie Vardy. And while Vardy at least tried to get in behind Iceland's defence, the likes of Harry Kane and Wayne Rooney remained woeful. Bizarrely, in the final 5 minutes of the match, Hodgson replaced Rooney with his Manchester United clubmate Marcus Rashford. The 18-year-old, youngest player in the tournament, had been entrusted with coming up with a tournament-saving goal with the clock winding down. Still, Rashford has been blessed so far this year with the kind of luck that England don't quite know the meaning of, and he tried valiantly, running at his wing-back on the left side on 3 occasions, almost making something happen, but it was too little too late. The performance from the players had been abject, but truth be told, many of them had been picked for reasons that shouldn't matter at this point in the tournament. The game had been begging for Vardy and Rashford to replace Kane and Sterling, and Hodgson only belatedly realized. As the referee blew the final whistle, England's players collapsed onto the turf almost as one, their heads in their hands, unwilling to confront the reality. Superstars of their mega clubs back home, but whipping boys here. And that wasn't the end. Just about 20 minutes after the match ended, Roy Hodgson sat behind a table in a room full of press and media persons, itself highly unusual, and proceeded to offer his immediate resignation from the post of England manager. Such things have happened before, this is football management we're talking about, but there was an element of pre-preparedness in what he said that hinted that he may have been writing the words in his head while his team was still chasing the equaliser that would have made all the difference. After reading out his statement, which also intimated the exit of his staff, Hodgson left the room without taking any questions and is presumably still walking home. The English press will be out with its take at about when this show comes out, but if we were Hodgson or the England team, we wouldn't read it. It's going to be a bloodbath, that's for sure, and Hodgson will not be judged gently, which he doesn't deserve in any case. Cowardice is not what is expected from the manager of the England national football team, but despite all his experience, the undoubted quality of his young team, and the fact that he had already once saved them with his substitutions versus Wales, he failed to inspire them in any way. Managers always have an axe hanging over their heads, and in Hodgson's case, with his contract running out, it was there by default, and so the expectation would have been that he'd have gone out swinging. Instead, he went out like a craven. And now, the fearless and thrilled Iceland will plot the downfall of France. The second big talking point, which is probably the most important football result in over half a decade, bigger even than Germany's 7-1 hammering of Brazil in the World Cup semi-final, was Spain losing 2-0 to Italy in Paris. Like we mentioned in the preview yesterday, like Brazil, Spain had also been hammered in the 2014 World Cup by Louis van Gaal's Flying Dutchman. But that had been an aging and tired side which hadn't known what to do with Xavi as the great Barca midfielder entered the twilight of his career. The cracks had begun to show at the Confederations Cup a year earlier, but at the World Cup, it was evident that the Spanish side would need new blood. For years now, through all of Barcelona and Spain's dominance, a period that contained 6 La Ligas, 3 Champions Leagues, 2 European Championships and 1 World Cup, an unprecedented amount of silverware for a single group of players, we were told that the tiki-taka style of football was bred into Spanish footballers and in particular into the kids at Barça's famous La Masia Academy. Instead, what we found this time was that in the absence of Xavi, tiki-taka was dead and buried, despite the best efforts of Iniesta, Busquets, Silva, Fabregas and Piqué in that order. There are a few people who are credited for tiki-taka, which in simple football terms translates to don't let the opposition so much as touch the ball. Johan Cruyff and the other luminaries that led to the establishment of total football at Barcelona, Frank Rijkaard's midfield of Xavi, Iniesta and Deco, which Sir Alex Ferguson once described as a passing carousel, and Luis Aragonés, who made a game plan out of the style. Then on, it went in two directions, as Pep Guardiola added Messi to it to make it a force of nature, and for Spain, Vicente del Bosque took it to the extreme, allying it, we're sure, with the Vuvuzelas in South Africa, because of which any team that somehow managed to steal the ball quickly lost its nerve and returned it. Jose Mourinho, Cristiano Ronaldo, Manchester United, the Germans, the Italians, and a few others would have far more embellished CVs had it not been for the might of tiki-taka. But yesterday, and in this tournament, it failed. As per live score, in the first 3 matches, Spain only managed to exceed 60% of the possession on one occasion, which was against the Czech Republic. In 2010, possession would have been at a universal 75%. Yesterday versus the Italians, who were well drilled, that's for sure, nobody displayed the kind of leadership that befits a team that has won the amounts that this group of players have. There is a tendency for teams to lose their minds while facing the Italians or the Germans, but these players had shown themselves to be completely unfazed whatever the circumstances. If they ever lost, the opposition team would bear the scars as an additional trophy, but last night, as Spain trailed Italy for about an hour before finally being put out of their misery, none of their traditional hallmarks were on display. The relentless press that inevitably forces a mistake had given way to tired tackling that gave away free kicks instead. The patient passing was ditched in favour of getting strikers the ball early, and in both boxes, Piqué and Ramos were uncharacteristically dominated by Italy's defenders. It wasn't Spain, it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't tiki-taka. It would be a shame if it turned out that despite all the contributing factors and the collaboration required to play the game at such a technical level, it was Xavi and only Xavi who made Tiki-Taka tick. Still, while Spain go do a bit of soul-searching and a group of the most successful footballers in history try to decide what to do with their careers, it's worth pointing out here that if this is going to be the end of Tiki-Taka and this method of playing, then it went out unbeaten. No team in any form of the game managed to defeat it in its prime. Bayern Munich hammered Barcelona 7-0 over two legs in 2013, but that was the late Tito Villanova's Barcelona with Messi out injured. Perhaps we'll never see football played this way again, because it requires players of extraordinary quality to execute, or perhaps we will as more sides attempt to emulate it, such as Bayern and Germany. But one thing's for sure, it will take a special bunch to accomplish what this group of players did, and history will remember them for it. We'll come to the Italians and the many supreme encounters that remain in this competition in the coming episodes, as we have a couple of days before the quarterfinals begin. But right now, there's one final issue that we simply have to talk about. Yesterday, before any of the Euro action happened, Chile won the Copa America Centenario in the United States, beating Argentina in the penalty shootout. This is the second consecutive summer that such a thing has happened. Messi, who played for the entire 2 hours, missed his spot kick, and though it didn't turn out to be the most critical miss, he was understandably gutted by the end. Apart from these two Copa defeats, he's also been in the losing side at the FIFA World Cup in 2014 and a while back in the Copa America of 2007, which Argentina lost to Brazil. That's a lot of heartbreak, even for a player who generally ends up winning far more than he loses, but it was compounded by a few things. While there are many who gloss over the still ongoing and too close to call Messi-Ronaldo rivalry to proclaim the Argentine the greatest player in the world, even in history, and have rather joylessly been doing so since much earlier than was necessary or before some established parameters were laid, in the competition to be the best player in Argentina ever, Messi must always have known that he would be judged alongside Maradona based on his success at the World Cup. Maradona won one against Germany, while Messi came ever so close but failed at the final hurdle. Also, there's the fact that he hasn't always felt appreciated in Argentina, which is understandable, seeing as he is more Catalan than anything else. For all of these reasons, or for none of these reasons, yesterday, after the Copa final, Messi announced his retirement from international football. He's 29 years of age, so no matter what anyone tells you, given that there's a World Cup coming in just 2 years' time, it's properly 2 years too early to be announcing his retirement. It's a bit of a blow to international football as a whole, especially given that you'd ideally like Messi to continue playing till 2022 in Qatar. He'll be 35 by then, but then again Zidane was at a similar age when he walked off the field for the final time with Marco Materazzi still rolling on the turf. Messi is reaching the age where he will need to evolve his game. In fact, the process has already begun, and more than anything else, this is evidenced by the fact that Luis Suarez scored 18 more goals this season at Barcelona. Unlike Ronaldo, who will probably still be trying to be golden boot every year till the end of time, Messi will likely adapt his style at Barcelona. His club are the biggest winners in all of this, as this guarantees them a fit and focused Messi for a while yet, and he's not leaving them now. For Argentina though, this is an opportunity to smell the roses. A number of other players may also retire to prolong European club careers, and the national side has to be built again for Russia in 2018. If they make it there, there's probably some sense in giving Messi a call and asking if he'd like to join up. The World Cup qualification process for South America is 4 years long, and that's torturous for a player who went through the whole process only to lose at the very end once before. Maybe a wild card for Messi is what is required here, because the world's best player simply must be at the World Cup. We hope you enjoyed this climactic episode. There's a lot more action to come though, and we'll be back. But for now, I'm Ankit Prasad, and this has been European Nights.
Music.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.